Welcome to Audible Insights, brought to you by the Insights Association, the leading voice, resource, and network of the marketing research and analytics community. With our host, Paul Kirch, research industry veteran and business leader, and our amazing guest lineup, we'll uncover actionable insights and creative new ideas that you can apply to your own business so you can stand out from the competition. Here's Paul Kirch.
Today on Audible Insights, we've got David Intrader. Now, he brings a wealth of real-world storytelling experience to the research industry. He's Harvard-educated and Madison Avenue-trained. He's worked on both the creative and strategic sides of the communication business in the U.S. and abroad. Now, over the years, he's helped companies like IBM, Chase, BMW, Fidelity, Unilever, and others tell their stories in a clear and compelling way. And now at RTI Research, he's synthesized research findings for brands like Amex, Synchrony, and the Cleveland Orchestra into stories that can not only be easily communicated through those organizations, but even more importantly, acted upon. Moreover, what he knows has been sought out by universities like NYU and Johns Hopkins, along with organizations including Red Bull, Papa John's, and the U.S. Navy. Now, he has a presentation that he's done for the research industry, which was entitled, What Does It All Mean? Research Storytelling for Turbulent Times. In that, he introduces attendees to some of the ideas covered comprehensively in RTI's new online course, From Data to Meaning, Storytelling for Market Researchers. At the end of our talk today, we're going to share with you how you can get more information on that course. Look, if you want to get better at storytelling, David's the person to help you get there. So we're really excited to welcome David Intrader to the show. David, welcome to Audible Insights.
Well, thank you, Paul. Glad to be here.
Hey, well, we really appreciate you coming on. You have a lot of creative experience, and you have been in the ad agency world, and now you're with RTI Research as their chief meaning officer. And I bring all this up because a lot of our listeners out there are constantly trying to do a better job of storytelling with their data. And on the qualitative side, I think storytelling often seems easier. But I think we're doing a disservice on the quantitative sometimes by just presenting numbers and maybe tabulations and other data points and expecting our clients to do something with it. Can we do a more effective job of storytelling as an industry? And where do we start with that?
Well, the answer is yes, one can do a more effective job. I think the important thing, where you start, is really understanding what we mean by a story. I mean, often, you know, we hear of storytelling, we think of that as something emotional, which it can be, and when it's great, it is. But we don't talk about the structure of a story and the idea that needs to drive a story. So the first step for any storyteller is to have a clear grasp of what we actually mean by a story across any medium. Important insight to have about this is that a story, as the historian Arnold Toynbee said, is not one damn thing after another. Toynbee was talking about history in this context, and he made that famous statement. And often in research, as well as in business in general, people have a lot of data points. Now, they might be data points in qualitative, in which interviewees have said certain things, or they might be data points from a quantitative study. And we have this list of stuff. And what it means to have a story is to somehow, one, filter that list. And in filtering that list, you come up with an idea. A story needs to be driven by an idea. So then the question becomes, well, what do you mean by an idea? And in our business, what is meant by an idea is an assertion of some sort, a proposition, some case you're arguing for. So for example, love is not a story idea. Love conquers all is a story idea. Insights about millennials is not a story idea. Millennials are yearning and nostalgic for a life they've never even experienced is a story idea. It might be a good one, it might be a bad one, but it is an idea. It is an assertion of something as opposed to a mere list. So I think both qualitative and quantitative face the same risk of just offering up, as Toynbee says, one damn thing after another, but they also have the same opportunity to integrate and synthesize that material and to filter that material through, you know, an angle or an advertising, what we call the big idea, to have some proposition, to have something that this story is about. And in different fields, you know, they have different terms for the idea of a story. I mean, journalists talk about the angle. Scientists talk about the theory. Lawyers talk about the thesis of the case. Musicians and composers talk about the hook. I come out of advertising. We call it the big idea. And so this is central to storytellers of all kinds across all media in all different fields. The idea of an idea is central.
Yeah, so when we have these ideas that we are able to put into the form of a story, how do we present that in a way that our clients can take and run with that and sell that up the food chain? Because I think that's often the biggest challenge is we give our reports or our data to somebody on the research side of a company that might have contracted with us, and then we expect them to sell that up to the C-suite. And often it falls short because we've done them a disservice by not telling a good enough story. So how do we present this in a way that allows them to be successful internally?
Well, once again, it comes down to making decisions and deciding and prioritizing in your data set what's really the most important thing. And there might be a number of things that we tend to call insights, for example, right? Let's say you have 5 insights. Well, that's nice. The question might be, well, so what? There's a higher level of abstraction in which you can take those 5 insights and say, well, this is what it means. I can reduce this down to a single proposition of some sort, something short, something that's easy to understand, that can be simply communicated and that you can act on. Now, the problem here, the challenge is, one, it's hard to do. Intellectually, it's hard to do. It takes a certain amount of time. And of course, there are all the kind of disincentives in large corporations of actually making the decision that is required to actually tell a story. Like I say earlier, a story is a proposition. You are asserting something. You're putting your chips down on something, and that can be tough. So often, as you say, Paul, there's a sort of a kicking of the can down the road in which one offers up a list of one damn thing after another. It seems like it's of value because there's a lot of stuff there. But in fact, it often is not of very much value because as you go up the ladder, someone looks at this and say, well, I have these, you know, these 20 points. That's fascinating. But like, so what? So at some earlier point is what we're doing at RTI and overall to start thinking about this idea of an idea and to structure your idea in a way that it is simple, fast, and of course, accurate and true to the data.
So what about cultural or generational challenges that you're facing in terms of maybe the approach to storytelling? Do you see any challenges there? And if so, how are you addressing those?
I think there are always certain cultural differences. I mean, I worked for years globally, and just for example, the sense of humor among the French is very different from the sense of humor we have here in the States. And I'm sure throughout the States, people have different senses of humor in different groups and different ages. But once again, you go back to what is the underlying story? What is the underlying structure of the story? I think these issues are true, but relatively trivial and can be easily addressed. Now, one could say, okay, younger people have less time and they should make things shorter. Well, I'm all for that. Of course, the whole argument of a good story is that it is simple, or at least it can be reduced to a simple proposition. And of course, it needs to be structured in a way that all the elements, all of the formal elements of your story is supporting that central idea. Getting back to cultural differences, I mean, for example, I mean, if you read Joseph Campbell or study, you know, Carl Jung, you know, there are mythological stories that cross cultures, you know, since eternity. I mean, you have, for example, virgin births and floods and evil serpents occurring in across all cultures in their sort of origin or stories. You know, we see it in the Bible and you see it in the Indian holy books and throughout the world. So this is where I'm going at. It's the underlying issue that's the real challenge. One can always make something shorter. One can adjust a story to certain kind of particular cultural variables that might exist out there. You could argue the other side that we're all in business and the world of the economy is fundamentally, basically a global culture. But I don't think that's the real question. And I think that's where people get off track about storytelling. They tend to think about it in terms of its style rather than its idea and its structure. I mean, a way to think about it is... So it's like website design, right? You've got HTML and you've got CSS. You've got the HTML code, which is the basic code, the structure of the page. And then you can come in with your CSS code and you can design it in different ways to make it look different. The CSS is posterior to the HTML, the underlying structure. I know I might be going on a lot about this, but it's so central and it's so overlooked that that's really the thing to keep aware of. And that's what I've spent a lot of my life doing and also teaching.
Yeah, well, I own a web development company, and so we talk a lot about user interface and user experience. Those are the two elements that go into a really solid designed website. And your user interface is your website, but the user experience is the navigation and how you basically present that story that you're telling on your site. So I think it ties very much to that same analogy you just referenced, the idea of making it easy for the person following the story to understand what the high points are and what the obviously key points of the story are so that they can make relevant decisions. Is that correct?
Exactly. I mean, I think you really put your finger on it. I mean, when we talk about styles, we talk about design, often there's a misunderstanding. We think of design as somehow a decorative thing. Oh, make the site pretty or make this research presentation, design it up. But what is design? Whether you're designing a story or designing a web page, what design is, it has a structural function of guiding the viewer in a way of guiding them, of structuring them through your site. Look at that. This is more important than that right now. Go this way. Move that way. In a sense, you are directing the viewer to move down a certain path. That's storytelling. Storytelling happens in time. You go here, and then you go there, and then at the end, you've learned something.
So, David, these stories can be obviously presented in video format, visual format, audio only written. It doesn't really matter how the story is related, but are there some simple rules or maybe a starting point for somebody out there that's wanting to improve on how they're presenting their story, some simple rules that they can follow to really piece the story together or weave the story in a way that presents a tale that gets them where they want to?
Well, sure. The first thing is to be able to express your story in a sentence. That's the key. It all starts with the script. Even if your story ends up having no words and it's totally visual, it's all about the script. So the first thing is to have your proposition. What is the story about? I mean, classic Hollywood story. You know, boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl. Right? That is a story. That is a fundamental, simple idea and structure. So that's the first question. And I say it's not an easy question to answer because often you have a lot of data, be it qualitative or quantitative, and there are many potential stories in that data. So you have a choice. You can say, well, there might be many potential stories in this data, but this one story, there seems to be maybe a preponderance of evidence that leans the story that way. Or there's a higher level of abstraction that you can go to that includes these many stories and say there's sort of a meta story, and that becomes your story. So the key thing is to be able to tell your story in a simple sentence. Then you have to structure your story. Well, it depends. You might be doing it as a website. You might be doing it as a PowerPoint presentation. We're doing a lot of video work. And there you have to make your formal choices or what one might call them your creative choices in a way that supports your idea. Every element should be supporting this basic idea. For example, let's say you say love conquers all, right? Let's say that was your idea. The choices you would make, first of all, in terms of your actual content, anything in your data that does not support your idea should be left out. That doesn't mean it's dismissed, that it should go into, let's say, an appendix, a robust deck with all your data. But when we're talking about a story, what we're really talking about is sort of the top line story that an executive will want to read or see. It's the distillation, maybe sometimes it's called an executive summary. It's what is the top line or maybe the bottom line, however you want to call it. So this thing has to be very simple, and it has to be anything that doesn't fit should be put to the side. And once again, I'm not saying that is irrelevant, but it is secondary to the story that you have chosen to tell. So that's another thing to be thinking about. You should be aware of the structure of your story. And there are many different kinds of structures that you can use. They have different names. There's the famous hamburger structure or sandwich structure that we all learned in high school. You know, say what you're going to say, say it, and then say what you said. There's a three-act structure, which is basically problem-solution. And that's a good way to think about these things, too. Very simply, that you have, there is some problem, there's a status quo.
There's some copywriting strategies that I studied in school that I think are really relevant for storytelling. And that's kind of the idea of knowing your outcome and almost working backwards.
Exactly.
Do you find that that's something that works really well in the research space?
These are fundamental principles. These are applied to research. They apply to marketing. They apply to if you're making a speech. These are deep things that are the essence of it. The rest, you know, when you have that down, like you call it knowing where you're going, right? I've called it the idea. It's the same thing. If you have that kernel, that this is what this thing is about, and it's not about those other things, at least for the moment, then the stylistic considerations become just a sort of a technical problem. It actually becomes kind of fun. Usually the hardest part of the storytelling process is, like you say, knowing where you're going to end up. Now, this might take a little bit of trial and error to get there. I mean, I've done qualitative research stories in which, you know, I have, you know, 18 hours of footage and I want to trim it down to 3 minutes. And there's a lot of good stories in there. And sometimes you might think, oh, this is often I think about how will the film open? What's the first thing? And then what's the last thing? And then sometimes you think, okay, I kind of have it now. I kind of have my idea. I kind of know where I'm going. And by the way, emotionally, you feel great then. Then it really becomes a lot of fun. Often before you've found that, it can be one can feel sort of anxious searching for that idea. But the point is, and this is where we get into sort of the creative process, what you might find as you're actually building your story is that thing that you thought was so great to start the story, well, maybe that should go at the end. And the end should go at the beginning. Or maybe actually as you built it, neither are the appropriate thing. But in the process of building your story, you've learned something about your material, and you come up with, you know, a slightly different idea. This gets into the whole idea of design thinking and creative thinking and how we actually work when we're creating stories. Because sometimes you might have your idea, it might just jump out at you early on when you look at your data. Oftentimes, it's not quite clear. We all know this from in both qualitative and quant, often people are sort of talking out of both sides of their mouths. They say one thing, they kind of think one way, they also think the other way. They say all sorts of stuff, and you're left with these, you know, these data points. And you have to sort of sort out what is really significant, what's less significant, make your choices, have that idea that, like you say, you know where you're going, and then to actually start to build the story, whether it's a video or whether you're doing a PowerPoint presentation, that the story has a certain amount of direction. This is what I get back to what I was saying before about structure, let's say a three-act structure. For example, one way to structure a story is you start out with the status quo. Let's just say people have been believing X about a certain category. And then in classical three-act structure, there's a disruption of the status quo. But things have changed because of Y. And that change is creating a problem of sort. It's creating an obstacle of some sort. We, the research company, dealt with that obstacle. Or consumers are dealing, let's say, with a certain obstacle, a certain change of mindset. And now we come out at the end with some sort of solution. So it's fundamentally problem solution, but often you can start with the status quo. Where have things been? Or where are we at right now? Then boom, there's the change of the environment. There's some disruption. For example, boy meets girl, first act, right? So that's the status quo. Or guy wakes up, right, on a normal day. Status quo. Boom, he meets a beautiful girl. His life is disrupted. But then the girl lives on the other side of the world, and he has to, and he loses her. Boy loses girl. Then the sort of the meat of the story in that situation is the obstacles in his way to get the girl. And of course, he gets the girl at the end. Boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl. The reason I bring that up is there have been countless Hollywood movies that have been made on that fundamental structure, each of which is, let's say, stylistically somewhat different from one another, culturally different, but underneath is the same fundamental story. And I think this is what's really exciting about storytelling and thinking about stories, is that you start to see, as you get hip to these ideas, you start to see all around you examples of these sort of underlying story structures that you can use. And, you know, there's not an infinite amount of them. They are manageable.
We're talking to David Intrator, Chief Meaning Officer for RTI Research. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Did you know that damages relating to cybercrime are expected to cost businesses and individuals $6 trillion annually by the year 2021? As handlers of massive amounts of data, market research and data analytics companies face enormous risk as potential victims of a devastating breach. To help members best secure their data, the Insights Association provides, through a separate entity called CERC, auditing and certification to the ISO 27001 standard. This certification is being demanded by an increasing number of corporate research departments. So, not only can ISO 27K certification secure your data and save your company from a crippling hacking incident, it can also secure your additional business. Learn how you can shore up your data protection with a strategic information security framework and at the same time garner a credential that elevates you above the competition. Visit insightsassociation.org/infosecurity for more information. That's insightsassociation.org/infosecurity. Welcome back to Audible Insights. We've got David Intrator, Chief Meaning Officer at RTI Research. Let's jump back in. So when I think about the world today, we're surrounded by ad impressions and information and text messages, emails, on and on and on. You know, we carry our mobile devices in our hand and often our face is buried in it. So our attention span is shrinking, at least for many of us that are active mobile users. And I think about the younger generation, the Gen Z and the millennials. Micro content has taken, obviously, a bigger seat at the table than it once did. Is this going to impact the way that storytelling works for the research world? Are we going to have to focus on these shorter attention spans, or do we, or is the model that you're referring to pretty timeless?
Well, it's timeless in that it can deal with a short attention span. I mean, you can have a Hemingway's famous three line story: "Baby shoes, period, for sale, period, never worn, period." That's a six-word brilliant story. It's kind of the point I'm making, Paul, is that this reduction to the essence of what your data is saying, or your interpretation, or the preponderance of evidence in the data, that your ability to reduce that to something short and small and easily digestible, that's a story. And we tend to think of stories as these long things, these long movies or long books, Gone with the Wind, War and Peace. But in fact, from a practitioner's point of view, and from what you said earlier about your own storytelling, is that it's actually a very small thing. The crux of it is a very small thing. We then tend to embellish it. I mean, if you were a guy like Dostoevsky or Dickens, you were paid by the word, you're going to do a hell of a lot of embellishments of your story. But nonetheless, the fundamental structure of, let's say, the hero's journey in any of these stories remains the same. So what this is all driving at is that, yes, you can tell a story in a very small period of time. The key thing is having the consistency in terms of, let's say, a brand story. I mean, for example, Snapchat, Facebook, they have these things called stories, right? So how do you use them? Well, once again, the choice is, do you just have one damn thing after another where, I mean, you just sort of bang them together and just arbitrarily call them the story? Or is there an underlying idea or strategy or message that you're constantly hammering home in these very short units? And that meta ambition, that is your story. So to answer your question simply, it makes a difference, but it doesn't make that much of a difference. It might actually be good because it forces the issue of being simple.
As those people are becoming more involved in the decision-making process in business, is that a way we're going to have to adapt?
Of course. I mean, people don't, there are two things going on. People don't have time related. Nobody's paying attention. How do you get someone to pay attention? Well, this is right. The big question, engagement, right? Everybody wants engagement. Well, one way to get their attention is to actually put out something that's coherent. Someone can actually understand quickly. That's the HTML of it, let's say. The CSS side of it is doing it in a way that perhaps is really emotional and gripping. And like I say, this basic problem solution structure can be very helpful, in which you follow the hero, and the hero can be a person, the hero can be the planet, the hero can be a city, the hero can be a group of consumers. Follow them through some sort of problem that they're having, and then they come out the other side happier or better or more informed than they were at the beginning, and following along with them is what makes the story engaging.
So we can talk about the data side of this all day long, but the reality is a lot of our listeners operate outside of that space, and quite frankly, they deal with business interactions all the time. Are there communication mistakes that you see being made, not just in the presentation side of things, but maybe the way we're approaching clients or the way that we're trying to relay things? Are there mistakes you're seeing made, and what can we do to improve those?
And broadly speaking, well, one is, I mean, it's hard to communicate effectively. One of the reasons it's hard to communicate effectively is you actually have to know your own mind. Let me give an example. I mean, I've always, you know, people often say writing is hard. Well, writing is hard when you don't know what to say. But any of us who have ever written a nasty letter to a store or something, or nasty when you're just angry about something, might be amazed how quickly that sort of comes out, how easy it is to do. You know exactly what you want to say. You're behind it. You're passionately behind it. You might have felt wronged by something. And you put it out there, and it's quite easy. Where communication breaks down is when people don't really know their own mind. So there's this fundamental problem. This gets back to this idea of an idea. You have to sort of know what you think about something, and you have to know how you feel about something. Well, how do you do that? Well, often it's by creating stories or actually giving it some thought. So you find in a lot of business interactions, there's a lot of talking. There's a lot of data. There's a lot of stuff. But then the question is, well, what does it all mean? And because there's a lot of stuff, often there's kind of misfirings and miscommunication, which can create all sorts of, you know, personal and political problems. So simplicity and clarity are, in many cases, very helpful. Of course, there's the other side of the story where politically, sometimes it's good to keep things ambiguous, as we all know, to give people room to change their mind and maneuver when decisions are being made. But as a overall business problem, I think this, let me put it this way, I think we have a distorted perception of value. People tend to think in business and outside that more is always better. I will create this PowerPoint presentation and I will pack it with a gazillion bullet points. Look at all the value I'm giving you. Or a research company will provide a deck. Look at this 200-page deck, thousands of insights. But in fact, we all know that more isn't always better. That in fact, often, and especially with the time constraints you're talking about with the new generation, how we communicate, more is often worse. But more is easier. It's like you just throw it all in there and you put it out and go, okay, here's your value. You got 1,000, you know, you got 1,000 insights there. That's kind of easy to do. You just got to type them up, right? The harder thing to do is to say, okay, I've looked at those 1,000 insights. Which one or which three are really meaningful? Or maybe those 1,000 insights are really all variations of just three general insights. See where I'm going on this, Paul?
Absolutely, 100%. And, you know, I want to step back and you talked about the example of the angry letter. And the one thing that I think that's kind of a common thread that a lot of people miss out on, and I want to get your perspective on this, is they take emotions out of their business communication. They try and get very numbers driven instead of emotionally connecting with what, or maybe even empathy is the right word, what your client needs or what really is best for them, putting yourself in their shoes. Is that something that you feel is maybe missing from this? And is there something we can do to help people get better at that?
Well, as a general thing, yes, it is crucially important to just be able to kind of listen to your client without an agenda of, or just listen in general. It takes a certain amount of, got to kind of be a little bit at peace, you know, in order to listen. To actually take in what is it that they want or how are they feeling? What's their problem? What's their pain points? What are they going through? In order to connect with your client emotionally. I mean, listen, data is so central to our world, right? And it's increasingly so. But business still comes down to people. People work with people they feel comfortable with, period. That hasn't gone away. In fact, it might even be more crucial now. We're all flooded with emails and people pitching us on all sorts of services and promising with all sorts of data. And I think all of us know when we choose to hire someone, we choose to work with someone, it's that relationship is just more, it's the most important thing. And we're all desperate for good relationships anyway. I mean, just to say something which is really impressive about RTI, these guys really get that. I mean, they are naturally, I guess, humanistic people, if you want to call it that way, and they understand the importance of relationships. So yes, I mean, we are emotional creatures, and it's important. As far as storytelling goes, sometimes the whole issue of emotion confuses things. That's why I've been, you know, going on and on about this idea of an idea and having an idea and a structure, because people might think, well, if I just am very authentic and very sincere in my presentation, it will make for an engaging story. But that's actually not the case. I mean, we've all met people who might be quite passionate about what they're saying and quite sincere in what they're saying, but they just drone on, and you're not engaged at all. Emotion is, let's just say, necessary, but not sufficient for storytelling. And the way you actually engage viewers emotionally is through the structural crafting of your story. Once again, the emotion is not something you lay on top. Just like I said before, the design is not something you lay on top for sort of cosmetic. It's like, well, I got my story. Now we got to squirt some emotion in there to make it effective. The emotion is built into the story itself, and often is that you face a problem and it is overcome and you learn something and you take your viewer, listener along with you in that process. It can be a thought process. There was some difficult challenge that the company had to face, or there's a difficult challenge in this data that's signaling things in a lot of different directions simultaneously. How did we maneuver through that? Let me take you on that journey, and we'll go together on the facing the obstacles that we face. And aha, at the end, we arrived at some place that was satisfying. So the emotion is built into the structure of the story, as opposed to being laid on top as a sort of cosmetic necessity.
Well, David, I love it, and I really appreciate, as we close this out and our story comes to an end, I want to give you the opportunity to tell people how they can learn more about you and connect.
Well, you can reach me at dintrader@rtiresearch.com. And one thing I would like to tell the viewers, maybe we should spell that out, right? D-I-N-T as in Tom, R-A-T-O-R at rtiresearch.com. But there's something else I want to tell your viewers about. We at RTI, we've created a storytelling course, an online storytelling course, which covers what I've been talking about here in far greater depth with all sorts of examples. It's called From Data to Meaning, and it's an online course, Storytelling for Market Researchers. The way you can access that is if you go to rtiresearch.com/course, rtiresearch.com/course. C-O-U-R-S-E, as in course, it will take you to a page. And I think whether you're in research or you're in any kind of business, storytelling is just foundational, and it serves you well, whether you're pitching for funding in your organization, or you've got to make a speech to shareholders, or you're making just a normal PowerPoint presentation in your daily work, or you have an important video presentation. So rtiresearch.com/course will take you to that. And I think viewers would really get a lot out of it. And if they want to talk to me directly, once again, dintrader@rtiresearch.com.
David Intrader, thank you so much for being on Audible Insights.
Okay, thank you, Paul. My pleasure.
I think storytelling is one of the most important things in business, especially business networking and connecting with clients. So we're really excited to hear about the work that David's doing and also the folks over at RTI Research. So we really appreciate him coming on Audible Insights and sharing his story. Once again, my name is Paul Kirch, host of Audible Insights, and I want to pay a special thanks to the Insights Association. Through this show and other means like the insightsassociation.org, you're going to find a lot of ways that they are advancing the insights and research industries. So we thank them for all their contributions and everything they do. And if you want to learn a little more about me, check out my other show, Boss Academy Radio, at bossacademy.com, where we focus on real business ownership success strategies. Thanks again for your time. I hope you have an amazing day.
Thanks for listening to Audible Insights, a production of the Insights Association. We empower intelligent business decisions through our support of the marketing research and analytics community. Learn more about our advocacy, code of standards, education, certification, and the many services we provide to businesses and professionals at insightsassociation.org. And if you'd like to reach out to Paul Kurtz directly, email him at paul@websitesandleads.com. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you have an insightful day.